Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, we have Amanda Boltz.
Hello, Brian.
Hello, Amanda. We also have Bill Graham.
Woo!
Yeah!
Crowd goes wild.
So welcome back to the Film Stage Show, back with what appears to be now our just usual lineup. I honestly don't know who is the permanent fixture on this show anymore.
Right.
Just Brian and his size.
I'm the only person you can really count on, because no one else knows how to do this.
So, you are the man that makes it happen.
I am. I don't know. I was trying to think of an MC that was like secretly in charge of an entire show and it would fall apart without him, but I can't.
Brian Fuller.
Sure. I was about to say Ryan Seacrest, and then I was like, ugh, I don't need that association.
You meant that kind of MC. Okay, I got
yeah.
you.
Yeah. So,
well,
anyway.
You're able to cobble it together every week.
Yes.
Which is nice.
I just pull it all out of nowhere, and somehow this happens. So
we could call you the cobbler.
Let's not. Mm-hmm. Let's call me Spotlight.
Spotlight.
Anyway, let's talk movies. We are going today to talk about Anomalisa, which is fresh to streaming this week. We're not talking about anything in theaters because, let's be real, nothing that came out this week looked particularly good.
And go see Cloverfield.
Yes. Actually, I wanted to talk about that. We got a lot of responses to the Cloverfield podcast.
Did we?
Many of them positive.
Oh.
For instance, we received an email from Jacob Sever? Sever?
Sever?
Sever. Sever?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Jacob's, I think this is the second email from him, isn't it?
So
I have no idea how to say his last name.
Podcast listeners, if you know you have a interesting last name or first name, you just go ahead and throw us a bone.
Yeah, that's a phonetic, because I'm going to call it Severe because I love the idea that somewhere out there is a man named Jacob Severe. Anyway.
Is he really angry?
Sounds like a Harry Potter character. So he disagreed with my reason for being mad at the film, but he had his own reason, and it's a reason that a lot of people have. It's that the end just kind of escalates out of nowhere and really draws the film out of its kind of sense of reality. So
is this kind of spoiler?
No, I'm not going to say anything beyond that. I'm actually going to skip over most of his email, but I will read the end, where he says, "Anyway, I just wanted to say this is one of the most entertaining episodes I've listened to, and one of the best podcast listening experiences in a while."
Wow.
So, thank you, Jacob. I was super concerned about that episode, because for anyone who hasn't listened to it yet, it devolves into a shouting match a series of times.
Right.
And yet, William Hill on the website also said, "One of the most entertaining reviews I've heard on this site." So apparently people like that.
Oh,
so,
no.
No, Brian.
I'm not going to do that just for the hell of it. But I will say, if you guys are into that, go listen to the 999 podcast.
Oh, the 999 and the Queen of Earth podcast.
We can
direct you.
That was actually another funny thing that Jacob wrote.
And make sure you don't get shot like a punk.
Yeah, no, don't get shot like a punk. No one wants people to get shot like a punk. So, actually, Jacob, I guess, trying to get my blood up for the next episode, made a suggestion of a movie that might actually kill me. And it was Alex Ross Perry's 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Oh, jeez.
I know.
Oof.
Good work, Jacob. Anyone else who has stuff to say to us, you can leave comments on thefilmstage.com on the pages that these are posted on. You can email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. And, of course, tweet at us.
Emails are always nice because they're much more thoughtful. They're much more thought out, which is nice.
Amanda does love both sending and receiving emails.
I love it.
Working on them all day.
Recording so she could send an email.
Oh, whatever.
All right. Well, that's it. Nothing else much to talk about this week. So let's get into our feature review of Anomalisa.
What is it to be human? What is it to ache? What is it to be alive? Each person you speak to has had a day. Some of the days have been good, some bad. Each person you speak to.
So that's a trailer that does very little to actually explain what this movie is all about. Anomalisa, the newest film written and directed by Charlie Kaufman, co-written with Charlie Kaufman. I don't know why it says that. Also co-directed by Duke Johnson. This is a Starburns industry production, and anyone who's a fan of Community will know what that means. It is a stop-motion film, and it only involves three voices. The main character, Michael Stone, played by David Thewlis, Lisa Hesselman, which is Jennifer Jason Leigh, and then literally everyone else. His credit on the film is everyone else is Tom Noonan.
Nice. Yeah.
Oh, is that Tom Noonan?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep. So this is a film about Michael Stone. He is a self-help guru for people who are in customer service. He is going to speak at a customer service convention, which sounds like the most bleakest thing on earth.
I wonder if their customer service there is really good.
I should hope it that better the customer be. Service convention has great customer service.
It's funny because my husband used to work for a company and he had to go to a customer service convention. And it gets pretty wild, actually.
I imagine,
they gotta let loose, man.
Yeah.
From serving wild. All those customers and being polite all the time.
Yeah, you just like throw back some tequila and start beating the shit out of people.
I guess there was a lot of flashing involved. Yes.
None of this surprises me because I feel like you're a customer service rep and then you like go to a city somewhere after like leaving your telephone farm in the Midwest and then you just just go wild.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Throw back a bunch of Appletinis. Isn't that what they drink in this film?
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Go nuts. Some Appletinis consumed. So this film is very interesting. Michael Stone is having a crisis of some kind. And he perceives the rest of the world to all have the same face and voice. It's interesting. He meets Lisa, who is the only person who has her own face and her own voice, and becomes instantly smitten. This is a movie that would be very easy to pigeonhole as another Manic Pixie Dream Girl fantasy. Let's see if it skirts that and perhaps becomes something better. So, Bill Graham, we're going to start with you this time.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of Anomalisa?
Ooh, okay. Well, I mean,
Sorry if you weren't ready.
No. I'm with Amanda. I haven't seen this film in a while. I saw it in early December, maybe even November. I literally saw it the same day I did a three-peat where I saw this film, I saw Bridge of Spies, and then I saw The Revenant. So I had a very long day inside a theater.
That is quite a day.
In one day. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they had two press screenings, and they were far enough apart that I was just like, let me just go pop into Bridge of Spies and check that shit out. So that's what I did.
Yep. And then you went home and tried to kill yourself.
Basically, yeah. Contemplated life forever. So I haven't seen the film in a while, so it's not as fresh on my mind, but it's definitely something that's stuck with me. I think personally the look of this film is really, it will catch you off guard if you're not prepared for it initially, and then you just kind of settle into it. I love the way it looks. I love what they did with how realistic a lot of the sets look and things like that. It's almost eerie the way that they kind of capture the way that it feels to be alone and traveling and get to a hotel and basically feel like this is the, I think I was reading an interview or a couple of podcasts where they were basically saying that when you go to one of these hotels on a business trip, it feels like your whole world is in that hotel. Like you just can't leave. Like that's it.
Hmm.
And it's really kind of claustrophobic, and it has a weird effect on you. And I can definitely relate, having done some business trips and things like that for, you know, whether it was press tours or just, you know, weird stuff like that, where, yeah, you feel like you have a job and it's, you know, everything's all kind of scheduled out, and, you know, it's hard to break out of that mentality. I thought the idea of the film itself is both fleshed out and too on the nose at times. I think it's pretty creative in the way that it goes about the story. I enjoy the story, but I can see why a lot of people think that it's missing kind of the little cherry on top at the end. It's missing this kind of real grand revelation, because to me and a lot of other people, it almost doesn't go as far as it should. And so I think that's a criticism that's been lobbied at this film, and I think it works. And yet I just really, really enjoyed the way they pulled it off and the idea behind it. And I think I don't necessarily need all my films to have some grand revelation and to ultimately change me in any way. If it gives me enough of an interesting perspective and, you know, maybe doesn't carry through or whatever, that's fine. It gave me something at least to think about. And if my, you know, if the criticism, the only criticism against this film is that it doesn't carry through, well, I mean, there's a lot of films like that are perfectly fine. They don't leave you with any kind of big grand revelation. They just, you know, here's this interesting idea, let's run with it. And the other thing is that this film is, I think the character relationships that they build are quite interesting, and they go ways that I wasn't expecting them to. The main character meets back up with like an ex-girlfriend, and their interaction in this film is like one of the most heartbreaking things I've seen in a long time. And I really, really love that interaction and just how real it feels, because it feels like it's not going to pull any punches the way it kind of unravels on him. So overall, I really enjoyed the look, the feel, and the base idea of this film. And yeah, I enjoyed it.
All right. Amanda Waltz, what about yourself?
Yeah, so, I mean, I wasn't really looking forward to this movie. As I've stated before, I really do not like stop-motion animation.
That's unfortunate.
That's such a weird thing. Like, what is your fucking deal here?
Okay, so I think, I mean, like across the board, or like
the board.
So we're talking like Coraline. Are we talking about Nightmare?
I think I like some movies in spite of the fact that they are stop motion.
Okay, gotcha.
Jesus.
Wow.
It's really strange, because like I grew up. Okay, the only way I can really explain it is that I grew up during the California Raisins craze, where uh-huh. claymation became huge.
Sure.
But there were a lot of very weird movies that came about as a result of that, where they weren't necessarily marketed for kids, but it was because they were animated. It was just assumed that, this is something for kids because it's claymation. And there was one in particular that my grandmother, when she was babysitting me, just kind of, you know, she just like sat me in front of the TV, and it was about these dinosaurs who were wearing suit jackets who were talking about the Bible. But I'm not joking. This was something that anytime my mom was like, "Mandy, cartoons were on," and I'd run down the stairs and realize it was claymation, I would get extremely disappointed. And I think that has just colored my view of every
religion and claymation probably.
It is very strange. If anybody knows what this, it's this weird, weird, weird movie where it's like, and it's also the biblical stories are presented in a way where no one is speaking. So it's like Adam and Eve. It's so weird. And something about that.
I literally ran a Google search trying to find this thing you're talking about.
If anybody knows what this is, if this traumatizing childhood experience I had is, please feel free to.
My Google search term was suit jacket Bible dinosaurs, which probably could have been done better. Because now I'm just getting a bunch of weird websites that are trying to tell me that dinosaurs never existed because of the Bible.
Don't.
So that was a mistake.
And how suit jackets certainly don't prove that dinosaurs existed. No, but I think it's just, and it's
listen
also
here,
just
we
the
have
movement.
Million-year-old suit jackets, okay? They were here.
That's where oil comes from, is fossilized suit jackets. But I think it's also in the movement. There's something about the movement of stop motion that it just... It just really unnerves me. So I almost get kind of nauseous. It's almost like found footage for me. So I really have a hard time getting invested in stop motion animation. But with this, you know, I did find it technically impressive. The details of the, I mean, I know that everyone's calling them puppets, but.
They are. That's yeah. What they're calling them.
And I think what I really like about it is that there's so many small details and there's this delicacy to the figures where you'll have these extreme close-ups where you see their little lips and their little teeth. And it kind of reminds me of whenever they have a doll showcase on QVC and they'll show like, oh, look at the hand-painted nails and look at the hand-painted lips. Like, there's just something so doll-like and delicate and fragile about all these characters.
You literally made me, like, freak out because I have watched those QVC things.
Yeah.
And they're just like, I hate the way those people talk about the things they're talking about.
Like, they're babies.
Yeah.
Like, they're,
oh,
here's
oh
your
my
baby.
God.
Here's
oh, you know
your
what?
Next
I think there's
baby.
A woodpecker on the tree outside of my window. Anyway.
Wait, what?
In my new house, I have my study set up, and there's a tree right outside of the window, and there's a woodpecker, and he's pecking at the tree.
Oh, weird.
Anyway.
Okay.
Don't know why
Carry
everyone on.
On
Earth needs
to. Is that
to
an omen?
That. Maybe. Oh, now he's getting harassed by a blue jay. Anyway, continue
blue
on.
Jays are
I
assholes.
Swear to God, I'm listening.
But yeah, so there's just, you know, it's just these very lifelike features. And these very delicate lifelike features, but they're juxtaposed with this very indelicate world where with this very jaded man. So there's a perversity to it. And I think that is very well represented by the Japanese sex doll.
Oh, man.
I think that's the combining of the two worlds. In this movie, or the sort of like technical beauty and just the sort of bleakness of the content is sort of like represented by this like weird Japanese sex doll that he buys.
What's the Scorsese movie about the automata?
Oh.
Automata?
Hugo.
Hugo.
Oh, yeah, Hugo.
I kept on seeing that thing and I was just like, this is really weird, like Hugo, like cross reference, like going on right now.
So this is still very much a Kaufman film, but at the same time, it's also a sort of deviation for him because with Kaufman, you know, there are these overarching themes where it's this sort of fear of being alone, but it's also this fear of mediocrity and being unexceptional. And that usually applies in his previous films like Adaptation and Being John Malkovich to artists. And so... it makes more sense, I think, just the very blatant insecurity of characters in his previous films. I think when it's parlayed in this film and applied to this very sort of whatever middle-aged guy, it's a little, you know, it sort of becomes this very typical tale of middle-aged male ennui. And it's... I think that's really the film's biggest challenge is trying to rise above this sort of very trite, like very like heavily explored subject of just this guy who's at an age where he feels like he's not fulfilled. He's just very desperately looking for something to sort of give his life meaning. And he's very selfish. He's very, you know, like narcissistic. And so I think that was the thing about this film where I was like, okay, what is it going to do with this subject that is going to make it distinct? I mean, we can talk about how it handles it later. There are some really, but I will say there are some really interesting moments of humor in this movie. Mostly applying to the voice work and the fact that all the characters do have the same voice. It is the same soothing male voice. Even the women characters have it. It's very strange.
Well, and also the baby.
Like the baby, the child kid. Has it. Yeah.
Not only that, but there is a scene where he is watching a movie and it's My Man Godfrey. Yeah, and he does all the voices in that too.
He's like, Godfrey loves me, Godfrey.
Wait. Can you do that again?
Godfrey loves me.
Oh, Jesus.
Fantastic. Oh, man, now there are two Blue Jays and the woodpecker's gone.
Oh, dude.
Just close your blinds.
There are no blinds on this window.
Blue Jays are like goats. They're just the assholes. Just one of the many assholes of the animal kingdom.
I hate Blue Jays.
They're awful. They really are awful birds.
I have no experience with Blue Jays at all.
Well, you should count yourself lucky, good sir.
Yeah, they're pretty common around DC, I think, aren't they?
Yeah, they're pretty much all over the place here.
Anyway, this is Bird Talk with Amanda, Brian, and Bill. but actually bringing up with My Man Godfrey, I think the My Man Godfrey is a really... I think that connects very well, and I think it's a very kind of like what Bill said, it's kind of on the nose with what this movie is sort of exploring. And because the whole idea of My Man Godfrey is it's this woman who it's this heiress who falls in love with her butler, but her butler is this millionaire who lost his fortune in the stock market crash. And she's like head over heels in love with him, whereas he could be like, he's just kind of indifferent to her feelings. So she's sort of like, it's sort of a proto Manic Pixie Dream Girl story.
Well, a lot of screwball comedies have that proto Manic Pixie Dream Girl thing.
I think I think that may have been the earliest one though, like even before like bringing up Baby or anything like that.
Here's the thing.
I think it's pretty early.
She doesn't like shake him out of his funk, you know?
No.
Like he's not. Given up on life. And in fact, doesn't he still have money? It's just that he's like tired of the upper classes.
Yeah, but she's such a daffy, oblivious.
Oh, she's a real daffy broad. Yeah.
Yeah, she's super daffy. Like, she's beyond daffy. Like, I would say, like, manic. I mean, she's the most manic of manic pixie dream girls. Like, but I think it's a very, like, deliberate choice, and I think it does sort of point to one of the things about this movie in the way that women are seen as serving men, in the sense that, you know, he's obviously looking for this very like superficial happiness, and he thinks he finds it in Lisa, but he's really just using her. And it's kind of this, I think My Man Godfrey is sort of like, you know, she's, well, I feel like we can talk about it a little more because I don't want to spoil it, because I think I will spoil it if I keep going. But yeah, I think it connects very well with the film. I don't know. But for me, I think this movie was fine. I had some issues with the ending and the message that it sent regarding like how it depicted Lisa, but yeah, we can go into that. Otherwise, I mean, like I said, it's a very technically beautiful film. I kind of wish it had done something with something like this too. There's so much work and so much detailing that I kind of wish they had done something a little more interesting with it.
With what?
Besides the story, with just, you know, with stop motion, I feel like you are creating, you know, if you think about like Fantastic Mr. Fox, I mean, that's such a, you know, that's such a crazy, fun, fast paced movie. With this, though, I wasn't really sure, and maybe we can discuss it, but I wasn't really sure like how the stop motion was supposed to enhance the narrative or how it was supposed to enhance this.
I mean, thematically, it's a pretty clear connection.
Okay.
Would you not agree? I mean...
Well, because there's things that happen where I thought, okay, this is going to take like a really bizarre route, and I'm really excited to see what happens. But then it never pays off, and I'm speaking specifically to the when his face starts to change.
Yes.
And it's that I thought was, I don't know, but I mean I'll let you talk, Brian, and then we'll kind of go into it a little bit more.
Okay, this is the perfect time for me to talk because there are no longer any birds in the tree, so nothing will distract me. I really liked Anomalisa.
Okay.
I loved the stop motion. I liked the fact that they kept the seams in the faces that they would usually like digitally correct out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it gave a certain level of artificiality to the film, and you know, what you were saying about the medium enhancing the message, I feel like that's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are people whose faces change because little pieces of them change, but like there doesn't seem to be anything within them. There's no agency in them. There's no animus. It's very powerful and strange. And also, I just kind of like the way it took me a while to see beyond the stop motion, to realize that everyone had the same face, not just the same voice.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know.
It took you a while to realize that?
No, it took me until he was like talking to the bellhop and the manager at the same time.
Oh.
And I was just like, what the shit is happening?
Well, because there's also the first person he meets is the taxi driver.
Yeah.
And I don't, but does the taxi driver also have the same voice and the same face?
Yeah,
I can't
he does.
Remember. Oh, does he? Okay.
About how he's got to go to the zoo.
Oh, the zoo thing is such a good running gag.
And then, not only that, but like the how you have to have like the chili. Because we do it different here. We serve it with noodles. It's like we put it on noodles. It's like, okay. All right. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I can do that at home.
But, no, and then I, you know, it's the type of movie where you get nervous as it goes on because there's a meme going around that says, I love that Charlie Kaufman film. You know that one where there's the guy who's, like, more intelligent and everything than everyone around him, ugh, and he's really sad, and then he meets a girl. And I feel like that's the kind of reductive criticism that people love to believe is intelligent, because they're wrong about things. So
sure. I mean, it's the same reductive criticism of like the Pixar films, right? Like that, what if cars had feelings? What if blah 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 had feelings?
Right.
Just like, shut up.
It's
like
the stupidest criticism, because it's like, I love that movie where there's the hero who has to save the world. Ha ha. It's like, but you do things
right
within these story archetypes and frameworks. And I think that people seem to think that Charlie Kaufman like invented the Manic Pixie Dream Girl with like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
No.
But yeah, he didn't. She very actively protests against that. Similar to his work in Being John Malkovich, where you have a woman who appears as though she could be that, but she's so awful that you see her so much more clearly than the protagonist.
She's almost like a femme fatale in a way.
Yeah.
Some way, yeah.
And this is just another of those.
Right.
It's another of him kind of examining the way that relationships work and how male ego is usually the point at which they detonate. And so I really liked that. I loved what he was doing here. And I loved, like, the painful truth of what it was saying about people and the way that some people, you know, every once in a while might think of their life and the way that some people get wrapped up in that idea and it can consume them. So that and the humor, this was a deeply uncomfortably hilarious movie.
Yep.
And starting from when Michael reads a breakup letter on an airplane, and you've got Tom Noonan's voice coming out of a woman, and it's like, "Dear Michael, fuck you."
Dear Michael, fuck you.
It's great. And Tom Noonan is a true like star here. I mean,
Have you seen Tom Noonan? Have you seen what Tom Noonan looks like?
Yeah, he's like 9 feet tall.
He's insane looking.
I love Tom Noonan.
I do too. He's in one of my favorite horror movies, House of the Devil.
Oh, he is?
A frightening. Yeah, I believe so. Wait, let me just make sure. But yeah, he's just a frightening looking presence in general.
He had a bit part on The Leftovers as a guy who was proselytizing for Holy Wayne. And I was like, way to get it.
Yeah, Tom he Noonan. Is like, he's, it's just so odd that, like, to choose him, honestly.
Because
all I can think of is Tom Noonan. Now all I can think of is just Tom Noonan talking, like, about Apple Teenies and stuff.
But his voice isn't traditionally masculine.
No, it's
he's
not.
He's got a kind of weird, soft-spoken, gender-fluid tone that really fits quite well. So
yeah.
It's enough where you know it's happening without being distracting. And he you know, he'll add some stereotypically feminine inflections, but other than that, it's not like he's like, "Oh, hello, I'm a woman now."
It's not like... It's not like Monty Python.
No, exactly. Yeah. No, he does a great job, especially with like being children and just different types of people. He's fantastic. Not to discount the work of Thewlis and Jason Lee, but I mean he's a star in this. So yeah, I loved Anomalisa. I don't think it's like a great date movie. I don't think it's the type of movie that you'll pop in on a rainy Saturday.
No.
It's definitely...
Or Woodpecker Sunday.
Woodpecker Sunday.
I will say, you know. When I went to... Because I went to a... I went to like a past screening, like a preview screening, but it was like open to the public. There were two women there who were... They were losing their minds over this movie. They were so... Like, just... uproariously laughing the entire time. I mean, it was, I think it really made the experience like all the better that they were there. Like, there's these two best girlfriends out to see Anomalisa, and you could tell they didn't know what it was about. They were like, "Oh, we got free passes to this movie." And they were like, "Oh my God, what?" It was, because everybody else was dead serious, because it's like, ooh, we're watching the latest Charlie Kaufman movie at this independent movie theater in Pittsburgh. And these women were fantastic. They were having a ball watching this movie.
Oh, man.
Speaking of which, were there any kids in your theater when you watched this movie?
No, but there is a cardinal in the tree now.
Oh, for God's sakes, Brian.
Jesus.
No, there
You're
were no...
You're a shill for the Audubon Society, aren't you?
Oh, you know what? I think I have a book of birds around here.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh my God.
Stop. Stop now. Stop now. Forever.
I can't be stopped.
Jesus.
There were no children in mind. There was a stereotypical, like, I can't think of a non-offensive way to say this. Like, I heard one of the worst conversations in my life waiting for this movie to start, because it was such a stereotypical, like, early to mid-20s, like, two girls talking about dating in the big city type of thing. And it made me want to kill myself. And
was it like, Tinder's awful, am I right?
Yeah, it was like...
Swipe right.
Like, I don't text him back, but he, like, keeps texting me, want to see if I want to do something. Like, and I just... like, whatever happened to a guy just, like, getting the point, like, when you just don't talk to him? And it was like... They did talk about Tinder at length. They talked about how weird it was to receive an email from a guy who wanted to go out on a date with them. Like, why don't you just, like, send me a telegram? It was awful. It was so... It was so
bad. Those girls sound
almost
really
moved.
Fun.
Good crowd, guys. Good crowd.
Yeah. But, no, once the movie started, though, they shut up and they seemed to enjoy it.
There was one child at my screening.
Oh, nice.
Like, in front of me. Oh, and I was certain that when the much-talked-about sex scene started, that they were gonna, like, hurry out. But no, they were like, this is it, kid. This is it.
Embrace it. Embrace like, it.
This is what it, this is what it is.
This is what it is.
It's not... really not all that. It's really not all, you know, all it's cracked up to be.
I was going to say, it's amazing how true this sex scene is.
Oh, yeah.
For stop motion puppets.
I mean, it is.
It rivals first season of Girls on HBO for, like, awkward, painfully honest sex scenes.
It is. It's very, like, these are, like, two, like, middle-aged, not super fit people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like fondling around and it's I think they're kind of drunk too.
They are a little bit drunk.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's, you get to see a fluffy puppet dick.
Fluffy?
It's a little fluffy. It's a
what
little
does that
like
mean? What,
not
can
fluffy,
we,
but you know what I mean?
What is,
like
let's
belted
pause.
Velour? I don't know.
What?
Because it's like they have like a fuzz. They have like a fuzz on them.
Ah.
You know what I mean? Like their bodies are sort of like, because it's this fabric, so it's like a little bit fuzzy. Like you can kind of see like little bits of like fuzz coming
okay.
off.
So moving on. Bill, were
someone
there
had their binoculars on.
So fuzzy puppet dick. Sorry, bro.
Fluffy. I just.
All right. No,
I saw my head like a cattail. I was like, ugh.
Like one of those Halloween cats where it's like,
meow! Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, I immediately began thinking of Zootopia because we were talking about fluffy dicks.
Oh, ooh, fluffy dicks.
What are we talking about? Let's move on. Any final non-spoiler thoughts on this film?
I would just like to say that if you're going in with an impression of like what this film is about, you'll probably end up being surprised. I think
yes,
I think there's a lot of ways
it
goes about things that you're like, wow, I was not expecting that
well, also
brutal
the marketing,
honesty and stuff like that. So
the marketing makes it seem as though it's this love story and
Well I wanted to talk about that, the marketing, as soon as we got into spoilers, because I guess safe to say that trailer is deeply misleading.
Very misleading.
The one that I just played.
Yeah.
So
every trailer I've seen for this is misleading.
Yeah, let's go ahead and jump in.
Let's jump into spoilers.
Jump into that fuzzy dick.
That talk that he's giving in the trailer is his prepared statement for the customer service convention that he's working on, and in the trailer it makes it seem like he's just being a thoughtful, almost Malick-esque like protagonist, but in the movie itself he keeps saying that, and then at some point he breaks down and he's like, I don't know, like I want to scream but nothing comes out and I have this emptiness inside me.
That was real awkward.
It was super brutal, and I was like, okay, this is not the movie that I thought it was. It is so much better.
Well, that's the thing about this movie that kind of I had a hard time grappling with, because it takes such a hard left turn into just, like you said, he seems very contemplative and very, you know, what am I doing with my life? I'm speaking at this customer service convention and I'm trying to like reconnect with old lovers, even though I'm married and I have a son, and I'm trying, you know, I'm obviously lost in my own like middle-aged male bullshit. But then it's just, he's just kind of insane.
No, he's super duper insane.
Yeah.
Like,
well, did y'all, I assume y'all heard about the fact that the hotel is called the Fregoli and there's some kind of like actual disease where people have this thing called the Fregoli effect. And so basically they go through their lives convinced that everybody is the exact same.
Oh, wow. Oh, that actually, you know what? That actually makes the movie kind of amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's the Fregoli delusion.
There you go.
Wow. It's a
delusional belief that multiple people are actually all the same person who changes appearance or is in disguise.
That makes this movie. Wow. Okay.
And so this is part of the legend of this film is okay. that apparently he didn't know about the Fregoli effect.
Yeah.
Initially, and he came up with this idea based around the idea that the genesis of this film is actually as a play, and it was supposed to be an audio play, and it was just done because he had three actors and he was like, okay, how do I make this work? And he said, why don't I just have Tom Noonan play the exact same person for all these different characters? And it would be a really interesting way to basically have the audience. He said the audience, there's no visuals. And so he said the audience is supposed to just kind of sit back and like visualize a lot of this stuff. And so if you hear multiple people or multiple people voiced by the same person, you could kind of just work with that in your head. And yeah, so apparently he didn't know about the effect or delusion initially and then became aware of it and then named it, you know, the Fregoli Hotel and stuff like that. So
wow, but, you know, you have just like blown my mind, Bill.
Boom.
Wow. Good work, Bill. Okay. All right. Well, you know what?
I don't wait, what are you gonna say?
that changed my ranking. Yeah. That changes my entire perspective of this movie. So okay. I don't even All right.
Sweet.
Too bad it happened in spoilers.
I know, man.
What I was going to say is I don't know that he is specifically a victim of that specific delusion.
No, I don't think so either.
But it's still,
Yeah, but his because he doesn't think these are all one person. He does have a dream wherein they become a collective hive mind and they're trying to keep him from Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
But
they're all like, we love you, Michael. I love you, Michael. Have sex with me, Michael.
Well, I think
only ever talk as though you're Tom Noonan.
Impression is like on point.
Yes, it's pretty good, pretty solid. I think it's interesting because this film basically takes this idea that if you've dated or if you've been with someone for a long time and maybe are falling out of love with them or something along those lines where you just get in a comfortable place, too comfortable for your own good, you can kind of go through the world and see everybody kind of similarly. And I think that's what they're kind of hitting at in this film. And I think it's an interesting way of approaching what it feels like to kind of fall in love with someone very quickly.
Right.
And that's the exact
same reason that it will never work.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of goes back to the My Man Godfrey thing, because the whole thing with My Man Godfrey is that she falls in love. It's like any movie where people fall in love fast, but you never see the after effect.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. and I think that's kind of like what this movie is showing, just how like, just how kind of tragic it is in a way. Anyway,
it's weird because, you know, you're walking through this movie and you're like, okay, so this guy sees everyone and hears everyone the same because he's bored. Maybe he just is like, he's the type of intellectual, quote unquote, who just like is done with everyone else. And oh, he meets this woman and she is pretty flippin' unremarkable. Like,
right, exactly.
Even as you learn more about her, she's not particularly great, but he is for some reason latched onto her. And I was like, okay, all right. And then he's like talking about like leaving his wife and all this other stuff. And I'm like, what the fuck is this guy doing? And then as soon as she starts like to transgress against this weird image of her that he's built up, she begins to be subsumed by the Noonan. And my heart broke in that moment, not for him, but for her.
Right.
Yeah. And that was the point in the movie when I was like, oh, I get it. He's a monster. Like,
right. No, he's a dick. He's a complete dick. And yeah, this movie, I don't even think before then, I don't think this movie, it doesn't look kindly on him, like even from the beginning, because no, I mean, he is very a complete, withering. Yeah, he is insanely self-centered and insanely selfish.
Here's the interesting thing, though, is, I mean, there's a lot of criticism that can be levied towards his character and things like that.
Right.
Not necessarily criticism towards the character itself, but, or, you know, the writing of the character, but he's just kind of a true dick, right?
Yeah.
But I think the interesting thing that a lot of people...
He's a fuck boy. Are we actually prepared to make a ruling on what that means?
No,
I have no idea what that means. That's a word that just keeps coming up. Anyways, I think the most interesting character in the film is actually her, because while she has this kind of dickish thing that happens to her, I think the way the film ends, it kind of gives you the idea that she's gone through this experience where she kind of gave in to a lot of her maybe desires that were masked by her nervousness and shyness and things like that. And ultimately, I think she comes away kind of changed and better for it. So it's an interesting way to look at, like, having a really, like, having an interaction with a guy that's, like, a really big dick. What? That
sounded really a big weird. Fuzzy dick, if you will.
Fucking huge fuzzy dick.
And so it's an interesting way to kind of look at it, because, you know, there's always, like, a flip side to, you know, oh, someone had, like, a really shitty interaction with someone, but...
Yeah.
Sometimes that may end up helping them in their own kind of journey, you know?
The funny thing about this movie is that you're watching it, and like I said, I felt super bad for Lisa, but then at the end, she's fine, because unlike Michael, she's not a subject to this weird delusion and this languishing ennui. Like, she has had a fairly tragic life, but she seems pretty okay with it. And... it's just interesting to see how the perception of your own life that you have is reflected in this film and the way in which they respond to this. Because Michael has basically just, like, seduced this woman, had sex with her, and then, like, forced her out of his life like a cad. Even... And then he goes home and he's upset. It's like, you're a huge fluffy dick. Michael Stone, and it's just weird, because she meanwhile is like, okay, I'm fine.
But I think what my issue with this film is, and I guess you can interpret it a variety of ways, because Bill, I think you have sort of more of an idealized view of it, where she is coming away from it a little more savvy, I guess. Like, she's I mean, she's still, because it ends with her writing him a letter saying, you know, oh, I wish things had worked out for us. And, you know, I can understand why they didn't. Yeah. I mean, she's like, she's the better person.
Sure. But I mean, she also met her hero. Like she was obsessed with this dude.
That is the strangest thing about this movie, is that people are weirdly, he's like a pseudo celebrity. Like, he's.
Yeah.
He's like a celebrity in the customer service world. And when he walks in the hotel, everyone's like, it's Michael Stone. It's Michael Stone. Oh, my God.
Everyone has read his book, and it has helped them. What was it? Was it like 19%?
No, it's like some insanely unrealistic number. Like, we increased productivity by 90%. Like, no, you didn't.
Yeah, and it's always the same amount of productivity. It's very
strange. Always, yeah. Yeah, because the hotel, I think it's actually in the dream world, says like, oh, we increased our productivity by... 900%. It's like some insane number, like some insane round number. But I think what I first, and I mean, I've thought about this, I've had time to like digest this film, obviously, but I think what I think also you could, I looked at it more as people who are, and I think this might go back to what you were saying earlier, Brian, about how intelligence is a burden and self-awareness is a burden, whereas people who it's truly, truly is, man. Whereas people who,
I wish I could be as dumb as the girls sitting behind me in the theater when I saw this.
I know, ignorance is bliss, man. But it is. I feel like that's kind of the message. At first, when I first watched this, I thought, okay, this is the movie. This is the message this movie is sending, is stupid people, stupid, naive people have it good because they don't know how bad they have it. And they don't
see the world the way this super awesome guy does.
Yeah, but the more we... yeah.
The two girls behind me in the theater were just a bunch of Noonans.
Just a bunch of Noonans.
It's like, super smart people have to go around and just deal with a bunch of Noonans all the time.
God, and that was kind of problematic for me, especially just because it's, it's this woman and it's just how poorly he treated her and how she seemed very oblivious to the fact that he was treating her like garbage. And then in the end, she was still so civil and so kind to him.
She's in customer service.
God.
Yeah, she's in customer service.
I mean, she's 900% more good at that.
I'm starting to see what you're saying, Bill, that she is coming back as a better person and sort of seeing that maybe she does have the upper hand in
she
a way.
Totally does.
I mean, she broke out of her shell.
And she is a little more triumphant.
Yeah.
She's more triumphant because I think a lot of people could see this and think that the point of the movie is that, here's this really smart guy and he's trying to connect with these troglodytes around him. And and when this girl suddenly starts to show her imperfections, she becomes a Noonan. And it would be easy to see that and be like, oh, okay, so the poor smart people have to deal with the Noonans of the world, and of course he's depressed.
Right,
but what it's really saying, in that reading, you would then say, and Lisa's totally fine with it because she's too dumb to know any better.
Right.
Now that she's a Noonan. But when you see her at the end, she's still herself. Her friend is now not a Noonan.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the movie's trying to say that, it doesn't matter about intelligence. It's emotional intelligence. It's empathy.
Right,
and
exactly.
Empathy is the good thing that we should be striving towards, not this weird crystallized sense of self-entitlement and egotism that Michael has.
And what's interesting, too, is that while he rails against the Noonans, it's also he's helped create the Noonans by being this this guru, this teaching people how to be better at customer service.
Oh yeah, he's just helping to create the homogeny that's Noonanizing the world.
Sure.
That goof.
Oh, Michael.
Michael Stone.
And I also thought it was hilarious that he bought the sex toy Japanese doll thing for his fucking son. What's coming out of its mouth?
I don't understand what's going on with that. That's
because they don't show
all of that. All of that is lost on me. I'm just I don't understand this.
It starts singing something in Japanese,
and then they say that semen is coming out of its mouth. Do you think that that's actual human semen, or that it's perhaps another piece of the clockwork that's coming out?
That's a good question, Brian.
real talk.
I think we have to figure that out before we can really say we understand this movie.
I will
Google
say that
it.
I kind
I'm
of
not Googling Japanese sex doll semen.
Why not?
I already Googled suit jacket Bible dinosaurs. I'm going to get arrested. They're just going to be like, we don't know what you're doing, but we do not like it.
Oh, my God. Well, I kind of wish that the Japanese sex doll, when it started singing, had also been in Tom Noonan's voice.
That would have been interesting.
That would have been great.
But anyway.
With an oriental, just super racist, voice.
Oh, it's very and I think the fact that it's I think that also kind of points to the way he sees women, the fact that because he goes to a toy store, but it's he thinks it's a toy store for his son, and then he walks into it
drunk. He's wasted.
Yeah,
I was really not understanding why someone would out of nowhere, when you're asked, hey, are there any toy stores around, you would automatically send them to the sex toy store. What is going on in your mind where someone is I need to find toys around here, and someone's just oh yeah, there's that sex shop down the road, go there.
I mean,
I mean, maybe
the cardinal in the tree now.
Spring has sprung.
Yeah, I'm wondering what it's going to look like when this tree is actually like in bloom.
Oh, it's going to be beautiful, Brian. Just full of asshole blue jays.
A bunch of fucking Noonans.
And fluffy dicks.
Just like, tweet, tweet, tweet. Anyway, man.
Okay.
Are we done talking about this?
I was about to say, I think that with that, we can sew this up. And, so Anomalisa out to stream now on iTunes and Amazon. Yeah, I say definitely see it. And apparently Amanda's now been swayed more towards the,
I've been swayed. You guys, let me tell you, too bad there was no entertaining argument.
I know. I feel bad. Hopefully the talk of the birds in the trees have made up for that.
Yeah.
I actually tweeted a picture of like my view so that people can, so if anyone's interested.
So I will say, my backyard and my house is a gorge that goes down into, it's called a green, it's like a Heath, it's called Heath's Green Space. It's basically like a publicly owned land where it's just like an undeveloped tree, like very like a tree heavy forested area. And there are some animal sounds that come out of there. Like, have you ever heard a squirrel grunt?
I've heard them bark. I didn't know they bark.
Bark. It's obscene. It's awful. And like raccoons.
I have a family of black squirrels living in my backyard. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, raccoons are horrible.
I don't have any raccoons. There are foxes though. There are foxes in the area.
Foxes scream.
Yeah, they do.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
It's rutting season for them too, so I've been hearing that.
Oh, anyway. They sound like pterodactyls.
So that's it for today.
Yeah,
next week, we will be talking about Batman versus Superman,
:
Dawn of Justice.
Or as my husband calls it, Yawn Man versus Stupid Man. Yawn of Butt Sick.
Anyway, I'm
fluffy dick.
Very much looking forward to this. You know why I'm looking forward to it? I actually heard the Empire podcast, and they did an interview with Jeremy Irons. And I forgot how much I love that man. And I forgot that he was playing Alfred now. And so I want to see it just to see Jeremy Irons as Alfred.
Oh, jeez. A very sexy Alfred.
God, I know, right? Anyway, so let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found between now and then. Bill Graham.
You can find me on Twitter at CableBFG and # WoodpeckerSunday. You can find me writing at freshfiction.tv and also the film stage.
All right, Amanda Waltz.
You can find me at Media Waltz on Twitter, also Media Waltz on Letterboxd, and my blog Steel Cinema on WordPress.
Also # fluffy dick.
Hashtag fuzzy dick.
Well, you called it fluffy at first.
I know, I called it fluffy at first, but it's fuzzy. It's a fuzzy dick.
All right. So I can be found on the film stage, where I have two articles up, one about the tarot readings behind Knight of Cups, and one about the original script that was then adapted and turned into 10 Cloverfield Lane. Check those out. You can also find me on my personal site, BrianJRowan.com and DearFilm.net, and Twitter, at BrianJRowan. # so many Noonans. So many.
Don't be a Noonan.
Don't be a Noonan.
Don't be a Noonan. Aww.
Oh, my God. People against Noonans. Anyway, that's it for today. Join us next week when we talk about Batman versus Superman. No, Batman v Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Have they told us that we're to say V and not versus?
There was something that like came out. I can't remember what movie was it where like the press or yeah, the press reps were very adamant about like how you said whatever it was.
Was it Anomalisa?
No.
Because people have had trouble with that. Because I'm curious because, you know, in a court reading, you'd say V, like Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
The Board of Education. But
so this is really, this is like a courtroom drama match about Superman and Batman.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
But in a boxing match, you know, it's like De La Hoya versus Mayweather or something.
Right.
You know, so it's like,
that that's a strange thing. So it must just be in terms of like the style guide. They
probably just ran out of letters.
There are a lot of letters in that. I'm going to say versus. Actually, no, okay. I'm going to say V because it's funnier. So, yeah, join us next week for Batman v Superman.
Where we'll also further discuss how the hell to say that.
Yeah, I hope it has a title line. You know, like how Gone Baby Gone, like there's a character that says the words Gone Baby Gone. So I'm hoping at some point Lex Luthor is just like, settle in for the fight of the century, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Jesse Eisenberg,
yes,
right?
It is.
Yeah. It'll be great.
All right. Anyway, let's get out of here. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Tune in next time.